Nandasya Gananjana Salakaya Achatur Milita Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovisham Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Kadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shigro Shiyuta Parakamalam Shigrom Vaishnavam Scha Shri Rupam Sagradatam Sahagana Ragadatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sarvaitam Savadutam Rajana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakam Zitam Scha Hey Krishna Karna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapkatan Shina Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishuvana Siddhadevi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Dhruvyascha Kripa Sinubi Vrcha Patidanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda Shedvedigadadhar Jivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo
Bhagavate
Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 1, Chapter 15 The Pandavas Retire Timely, Text Number 38 Swarat Potram Vinayinam
Swarat Potram
Atmana su samam gunai
Atmana su samam gunai
Toya nivya patim bhumir
Toya nivya patim bhumir
Abhyasincha gajavaye
Abhyasincha gajavaye
Swarat potra vinayinam
Swarat potra
Atmana susamam ganai Toyam nivya patim bhumir Abhyasincha kujavaye Swarat
The emperor
Potram Unto the grandson. Vinayinam.
Properly trained.
Atmanaha. His own self.
Susamam.
Equal in all respects. Gunai.
By the qualities.
Toya Nivya,
bordered by the
seas. Patim,
master.
Bhume,
of the land.
Avyasinchat,
enthroned.
Gajavaye, in the capital of Hastinapur. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter, in the capital of Hastinapura, he enthroned his grandson, who was trained and equally qualified as the emperor and master of all land bordered by the seas. Please repeat. Therefore, in the capital of Hastinapura,
Therefore, in the capital of Hastinapura,
he enthroned his grandson,
He enthroned his grandson.
Who was trained and equally qualified. As the emperor and master of all land. Bordered by the seas. Purport. The total land on the earth bordered by the seas was under the subjugation of the king of Hastinapura. Maharaj Yudhisthira trained his grandson Maharaj Parikshit, who was equally qualified in state administration in terms of the king's obligation to the citizens. Thus Parikshit was enthroned on the seat of Maharaj Yudhisthira prior to his departure back to Godhead. Concerning Maharaj Parikshit, the specific word used, vinayanam, is significant. Why was the king of Hastinapura, at least till the time of Maharaj Parikshit, accepted as the emperor of the world? The only reason is that the people of the world were happy because of the good administration of the king. The happiness of the citizens was due to the ample production of natural produce, such as grains, fruits, milk, herbs, valuable stones, minerals, and everything that the people needed. They were even free from all bodily miseries, anxieties of mind, and disturbances caused by natural phenomena and other living beings. Because everyone was happy in all respects, there was no resentment. Although there were sometimes battles between the state kings for political reasons and supremacy. Everyone was trained to attain the highest goal of life, and therefore the people were also enlightened enough not to quarrel over trivialities. The influence of the age of Kali gradually infiltrated good qualities of both the kings and the citizens, and therefore a tense situation developed between the ruler and the ruled. But still, even in this age of disparity between the ruler and the ruled, there can be spiritual emolument in God consciousness. That is a special prerogative. So the text again. Suratam potram vinayinam atmana susamam gunai toya nevya patim bhumir abhyasim cha gajavaye. Thereafter, in the capital of Hastinapura, he enthroned his grandson, who was trained and equally qualified as the emperor and master of all lands bordered by the seas. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutaya Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Janamane Namaste Sarasvatim Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskya Jyade Sitarne. In this verse it mentions that people will accept the government if the government is actually fulfilling the desires and the needs of the people. First of all, people have to understand what their needs are. If they don't know what their needs are, and they don't know how the government is actually responsible for those needs, then they won't know what's actually good government. In the age of Kali, it is said that there's no dharma and there's no liberation because people don't know what dharma is and they don't know what liberation is. They don't know Nityavidu Swarthikatim Hivishnu. They don't know the goal of life is to attain Krishna consciousness. Dharashaya ye bhagya ardhamani na. And therefore, they've been trained to hanker for something which is insignificant. So that even if they get it, their hankering is not really even satisfied. Instead, their minds are diverted to something else, so they hanker for that. Exactly the same way as the ass, his mind is fixed on the carrot which is hanging in front of him. And no matter how many steps he takes, he never quite reaches the carrot. But in order to advance towards what he thinks is a carrot, he'll carry a very heavy burden on his back. So people have been taught to become like asses, working hard for some carrot that they can never actually reach. And even if they do reach it, it turns out not to be very sufficient to actually satisfy their desire for happiness. Therefore, andaya tandira upigyamana te pisha tantra puru dhamibhada. We're already blind. The only hope, as it says, that now that Krishna is left, Krishna svadama upagate dharma jnana divisaha kalo nashta drishamesha puranartho dunoditaha. Now that Krishna is left, because Krishna left, therefore real knowledge, real religiosity has disappeared. Only because the Bhagavatam is present, therefore we can actually gain some vision. What is our actual self-interest? Without Dharma, people don't know even the most basic thing. Anad bhavati bhutani parjana anasambhava. That everyone is really depending on food. If there is nice prasadam, if there's nice food, then people can actually get some satisfaction. But they make food in such a way nowadays, it looks, maybe it looks attractive to some people. But there's no rasa, there's no taste. And because there's no taste, there's no energy. And therefore people, they simply want to get more and more and more. So everyone's, in the Western world especially, and now in India also, they're just becoming fatter. There's one man, he had an operation. He was the heaviest man in the world. And he had an operation, he lost 500 kilos. And now he's only the 15th heaviest person in the world. He was so heavy that he needed a hernia operation. And so the fire people have to come. The firemen had to come with a crane and hoist him out of his house in order to bring him to the hospital. Practically speaking, 60-70% of the people in the Western world are obese. Because they're eating something, it's not actually satisfying them, therefore they want to eat more and more and more. Because everyone wants happiness, if we can't get satisfaction, then we'll simply try to get more and more and more. Somehow or another, eat more and more, sleep more and more, more and more sex, more and more anxiety, accumulating money out of anxiety that we won't be protected. Even in the Western world, they've invented this popcorn at the movie theaters that have this chemical on it. So the chemical has less than zero calories. So when you eat the popcorn, you actually feel hungrier, more and more hungry. And of course, you put the salt on it, then you get more and more, then you get thirsty, and you buy the drinks, and you get buy more and more popcorn, more, and the more you eat, the more hungrier you feel. So at the end of the day, you're spending more on the popcorn and the drinks than you did on the movie. Because if there is no Dharma, there's no attempt for liberation, there's no understanding, even the soul being different from the body, and the aim of life is to have the soul become realized that he's an eternal soul and it has an eternal relation with Krishna. So if that's not there, there's no Dharma, then people will simply be interested in sense gratification. But in order to have sense gratification, then you need economic development. But if you don't have Dharma, then people won't know what economic development is. They're spending so much energy building big buildings. So what? What is the value of these big buildings? So that people can congregate in the middle of downtown? And what is the value of that? There's less fresh air, the sun can't reach there, etc., etc. Simply people are congregating in order to talk gossip, exchange drugs with each other, and go and watch horrible movies, which even bewilder them more than they already bewildered. And simply they're proud that we're able to build buildings taller than we did before. But inside the building, it's just, there's no air to breathe, there's no light coming in. So much energy is spent just to get up to bring you to the top floor. So much energy on light and air. And just sitting there in some apartment listening to everyone else next door fighting with each other. That they don't have enough money to pay for the rent. They think it's progress, but actually it's actually people are simply working hard and getting less and less satisfaction. And the leaders are simply misleading them because there's no education. You go to the topmost universities and there's no education. Actually, there is avidya being taught. But it's a prerequisite for economic development. Therefore, people go to these colleges, these universities, not to learn anything, generally speaking, but as a prerequisite to get a job. So they can get some money, so they can buy some food and eat. So that's really what's being taught, is how to get money. That's all. So-called money. And even the money is just doesn't really represent anything. It just represents some faith that is worth something. But that same dollar that we have today, tomorrow will be worth less. So you work equally hard to get that $1, and every day it's getting less, and someone else's, that value is being put into their pocket, and you think it's alright, because people are being cheated. So in Kali Yuga, when there's only economic development for sense gratification, then the result is you have a large group of people being cheated and a small group of people cheating them. The Shudras, mad after sense gratification, with no knowledge, with no understanding of liberation, are simply misled by a small group of people who are expert at so-called economic development, who are the cheaters. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada said there is a group of people called the cheaters and the cheated in Kali Yuga. That's all there practically is. But in the Vedic culture, there were actual trained Brahmins who knew what the purpose of life is. And they were happy. That's the one thing people notice about the Brahmins. The Brahmins, they didn't notice that they were dressed very nicely. Sudama, when he went to visit Krishna at Dwarka, what was noticed about Sudama was how he was dressed in rags. But still, because he was a Brahmin, he was allowed to enter into Dwarka. He passed through two gates where the soldiers were guarding the city, and himself and other Brahmins were allowed to pass through the gates. And when he entered into the palace Rukmini, then Krishna himself came from his throne and rushed and greeted Sudama and embraced him, something that he only did to Rukmini and Balaram. But Sudama, he was dirty, relatively speaking, because he had just traveled by pilgrimage from wherever he was living. And he was very poor, and his clothes were all tattered and ragged. And everyone was amazed. Why is Krishna, he's in Dwarka, mind you. This is not Vrindavan. But everyone was amazed at why is here Krishna is embracing this poor Brahmin. He can't dress himself nicely, he's not even very clean, and yet Krishna is embracing him. Because the Brahmin's opulence was not in external material trappings, but was in their consciousness. And therefore they were actually happy, at least happy if not ecstatic, because they had nothing to worry about. Just as you probably know, when they did their survey, who are the happiest people in the world, according to their own subjective experience, the richest countries, including Australia, didn't rate very high. The happy people who thought they were the happiest in the world were living in Bangladesh, where they had no material resources, practically speaking. But they were happy because they had some kind of consciousness. They actually knew who their neighbors were. They didn't really expect that much out of material life. They weren't waiting for the next iPod. They weren't worried about what was going to happen to their currency because it wasn't worth, it's not worth anything. They weren't worried about their job because they didn't make any money anyhow. They didn't worry about anything because there was nothing to worry about. They just knew that if there was a little bit of rice on the plate every day, everything was all right. Their economic problem was solved. Therefore, they had time for other things, like their relationships with their friends and their family. They had time to think about the Supreme Person. They had time to do other things other than just work hard, get some money, just so they can eventually get a little rice on their plate. And here it says that the kings were trained that the knowledge coming from the Brahmins who were conveying the knowledge of the Vedas, they were trained to respect that. Therefore, they're called jignasu, inquisitive. They knew that they didn't know, the kings, they knew they didn't know anything. Because after all, they knew that the Brahmins knew something. They knew the Brahmins were happy. They knew the Brahmins knew how to be happy. They knew the Brahmins knew what the goal of life is and how to achieve it. They had that much knowledge. And therefore they respected the Brahmins and generally followed their instructions. And they were trained to do that. When they didn't do it, it simply created a problem. And those problems, just like King Venu, he was declaring himself to be God. Because nowadays everyone declares themselves to be God. Not only a few rascals like Venu. But everyone thinks themselves God. And they elect someone who's going to help them, so-called, become better gods in this world. Of course, the standard of God in this world is very small. Here, if you have a house, you have a car, you have, the same wife, or maybe a different wife. You have a few children. And you have, a job. You're considered to be very wonderful. Valiant. Very strong and heroic. The same thing that the mouse in your house has. You're overwhelmed by your prowess. Your daksha. Because you're able to keep together a wife and a couple of children and a house and a car and a job. Then you're considered expert. And therefore you're walking around with your head in the sky that who's better than I am? Even God has to come door to door and beg for me. Therefore, in the age of Kali, when people practically have nothing, but the only thing they have is their pride. Pride in having so wonderful things made out of plastic. Prabhupada said, previously people had golden plates and silver plates. That's all the Brahmins would eat from during the sacrifice. And the sacrifice of Mandata, he had a mountain of gold, and therefore he provided all the Brahmins who came with golden plates. But not plastic plates or paper plates. Still, the Brahmins didn't even bother taking the plates with them. They simply left them there. Just like we throw out paper plates, they threw out their golden plates. So we're proud that we have paper plates. And now even the paper plates are a problem. Whether you have a paper plate which is biogenetical or can actually merge back into the earth, or that paper plate is going to last longer than the earth. Even after the earth is destroyed, the paper plates will still be floating in space. And at the same time, people are always worried. It says on this planet, at least a third of the people don't only eat one meal a day. Of course, they're probably doing better health-wise than the people who are eating five meals a day. But some people don't get enough. And it's not due to the earth is not providing, but because people are hoarding, because people are become greedy. And the people who are supposed to be protecting the citizens from lust, anger, and greed, they're as blind as everyone else. The modern politicians are simply paid by the intelligent vaishyas who've been able to manipulate the economy in such a way is that people work and they get all the profit, practically speaking. And people don't know what's going on. So the modern politicians, they pay off, well, the modern vaishyas who are able to trick everyone into accepting some currency made of paper, electrical, just digital money, are able to pay everyone off, bribe the government, bribe the educators, bribe the judges, bribe everyone with this theoretical paper money and electronic money, and therefore they bribe them in such a way as to keep this theoretical money going at all costs. So they can continue to exploit people and direct them towards the darkest regions of existence. Because they're blind. They think the goal of life is to exploit everyone. And that's what their whole aim of life is to do. It's not even sense gratification. It's not even eating or sleeping, mating, defending. It's just playing God with everyone. That's their happiness. It's just that I can lord it over and that by my whim anyone can be destroyed and therefore I feel I'm God. And they're manipulating the whole society. But because people are sinful, they've lost their intelligence, they don't understand how things are working, they just have a little football game and they're satisfied. Never mind that their whole family life is falling apart, the society is crumbling, the streets are crumbling, people's consciousness is less than that of the animals, but because their team won the football match, therefore everything's all right. People have been reduced to simply some people, you know, kicking a ball down from one side of it to the next, and that's the perfection of life. That's all they ask for. Never mind the quality of the air, the quality of the food, the quality of their relationships. Never mind. If somehow or another their team wins, then they can't complain. And if their team doesn't win, then they become so angry and disturbed, they're willing to kill the people on the opposite side. It's such an important thing. And this is just the beginning of Kali Yuga. It's only 5,000 years into Kali Yuga. Who can imagine what the future of this age is? How much people will become absorbed in so-called economic development? So-called economic development because they're really not developing economically. They're going the opposite way. And therefore people are ever more hungry. Even when they have food, they always feel hungry. They're ever more dissatisfied. They're ever more in anxiety. They can't sleep. And if they go to sleep, they can't wake up. They don't know how to eat. They don't know what to eat, when to eat, how to eat, where to eat. They don't know anything. Every respectable animal knows at least that much. You never find any animal going on a diet, counting its calories. You never find an animal, you know, wondering whether he needs carbohydrates or protein. He shouldn't eat so much sugar. Except when the animals become part of the human household life. Then they become as neurotic as their masters are. Then they wear clothes, they put the dogs in clothes. They bring him to the beauty parlor so his hair is nicely set. He has a special meal. They even have a dog, they even have animal dentistry. The dog has to visit the dentist twice a year, have his teeth filled. And at the end of the day, if the dog's not performing nicely, then they put it to sleep. There's no mercy. The dog is just it's part of the family as long as we want it to be. It's a human, is it alive as long as we want it to be alive. It has its own personality. And when it becomes inconvenient for us, we put it to sleep. We kill it. Murder it, actually. But we don't say that because it's our dog. And we don't do it ourselves. We hire someone to do it. They say, oh, this poor dog is suffering. Let it put it to sleep. So people have become so, they don't know anything. But they're very proud because they have a piece of paper. It says that they're a doctor of something. So they're convinced by that piece of paper. You know, they'd be maybe the doctor of, in America, they have one university. They give degrees in basket weaving. Basket weaving, weaving baskets. So the person has their PhD in basket weaving. But he's still Dr. So-and-so. What is the value of what he's learned? It has no value. Maybe after graduating from his postgraduate, he might be eligible to wash dishes in a restaurant. But he may find it hard to get such a position because he may be considered overqualified for washing dishes. But in the Vedic culture, the kings were, the basic things were important. That there was sacrifice. People were, their Brahmins were performing sacrifice. The Vaishyas were cooperating to give their, not simply a piece of paper back to the government. The government prints up paper, or they have someone print up paper for them. And ever this paper circulates. And to pay tax, you give them back a piece of paper. But the Vaishyas, they gave grains, they gave butter and milk, like Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men. When they went to the sacrifice of King Kamsa, when King Kamsa invited Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd men to come to the sacrifice, the Danor Yaga, then at that time Nanda Maharaj took the taxes to the king. And that was butter, yogurt, all these different sweets. That was how they paid their taxes. Something valuable that can be utilized in sacrifice. And the sacrifice when the Brahmins performed it. Then the result is that the demigod, Krishna was pleased, the demigods were pleased, and the rain would come so that the food grains would come easily, on time, and in great amounts. So that everyone got enough to eat with very little effort. And because they knew I didn't have to make such a great effort to get something to eat. There was so much, there's plenty of food for everyone. People didn't have to work so hard. You go to an island in the Pacific, you find people don't work so hard because they have coconuts. They can just, the coconuts fall off the tree, they get a, you know, they have a little hatchet, they hit it a couple of times, if they're not lazy. Get, hire someone to hit the coconut for them. And out comes the coconut meat and the coconut juice, and they get fresh coconut, and they feel completely satisfied. And they're happy, they don't have to do any work. They simply sit around dreaming of coconuts falling from the tree. Of course, in the Vedic culture, people knew that the aim of life was self-realization. In the absence of having to work hard to get their eat, to eat something, to get something to eat, then they spent their time thinking about Krishna. Watching the plays at night. You go to even Bangladesh nowadays, to the Hindu community. Then they have plays at night, the Ramayana, Mahabharata, and people spend all night just watching. Because they have plenty of time, and therefore it's filled up with nice plays and art and music and culture. And then an anxiety that, oh, it's so late at night. Because the next morning they know they don't have to go to work. There's no work. They live just to hear the Mahabharata and whatever. And still they get enough to eat. They may not be getting fat, most of them. But they value whatever they have. And it tastes good. Because they actually chew it. They actually have some value. Now if people have no value, they just gulp it down. They walk down the street with their, you know, whatever it may be. They have the sandwich and they're talking and they're walking down the street and smoking a cigarette at the same time. There's no value to them. They don't value what they're doing. They don't value anything. They think it all comes so easy. When one is in harmony with the laws of nature, sacrifice is performed, then food comes actually easy. Real food, fresh air. The demigods arrange everything very nicely, so it becomes just like heaven on earth. And then one can actually think about Krishna without much anxiety. And the leaders of society made sure that people were protected from especially this, what they're supporting nowadays, slaughterhouses, brothels, intoxication, the very things that the government is supporting, that's what the government protected the people from. They wouldn't allow these movies, they wouldn't allow this propaganda, they wouldn't allow this ignorant, misdirected education. Instead, they'd have real education, and people would be trained up ultimately to perform sacrifice to Krishna. And therefore, they had the brains to understand what reality is, what the purpose of life is, how to live at least peacefully in the world, and not simply look at what everyone else has had and feel depressed that I don't have, I'm not as rich as Bill Gates. With this false promise that if you simply go to school and get your job, one day you can become the president. All 20 million people in Australia, one day they can become the president. At least that's the American dream. Abraham Lincoln was born in a log cabin and he worked hard and he became the president. So even if you were born in a log cabin or less, if you go to school and work like a dog, one day you can become the biggest dog. So this is all a dream or a nightmare depending how you look at it. Krishna consciousness is meant to wake up what is valuable and what's not valuable. What actually is the goal of life and how to achieve it. This knowledge is actually very valuable because it actually reveals everything. And if we take shelter of other things, we actually honor other so-called authorities, then the result is we'll just simply get misdirected. So I'll stop there. Any questions? Yes.
My relative is of Gopal Bhakti Goswami, and he is a PhD. Gopal Bhakti
Goswami. Well, that's good. Gopal Bhakti Goswami, who's a son of Venkata, of the Prabodhananda Saraswati, he's a nephew. And Venkata Bhat was his father. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spent Chaturmasya, 4 months at his house, and Gopal Bhakti Goswami got an opportunity to serve him. And he visited Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Jagannath Puri, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu affectionately received him, and he learned, he was expert reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam in 3 different tunes. And when he went to Vrindavan, the 6 Goswamis, the other Goswamis, had, other 5 Goswamis, had Venkata Bhat always recite the Srimad Bhagavatam. So at the end of his life, he was always constant when he was reciting the Bhagavatam. His tears were always coming from his eyes. So the Bhagavatam that he had became washed out from his tears. So there was no Bhagavatam by the time he was done. But he's an example of absorption in Krishna consciousness. One time when he's coming to Jagannath Puri to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one Ram Das accompanied him. And Ram Das was a Brahmin. And he was carrying the luggage and doing menial service to Gopal Bhakti Goswami. But Gopal Bhakti Goswami didn't want the service, but still, because Gopal Bhakti was a Brahmin, therefore Ram Das said, it is my duty to serve you. And constantly Das was chanting the name of Ram 24 hours a day. When they arrived at Jagannath Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu affectionately greeted Gopal Bhakti. And later on, Gopal Bhatt introduced Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Ram Das, who he thought was a great devotee. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't pay him any particular attention, because Ram Das was actually thinking that he was Ram. That is, Ram Das thought he was Ram. So he was chanting what he thought was his own name. Imagine walking down the street chanting your own glories. That's what he was doing. I mean, most of us are not so puffed up. Imagine if I was walking around, Prahladananda Swami Ki Jai. All day long. So Ram Das was doing that, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew he was useless, so he didn't pay him very much attention, because he was an impersonalist, thinking he was Ram. Any other comments or questions? Yes.
As you said, how today's age, like, people are so much proud of whatever they're getting, which is not so substantial from the devotee's perspective, that, you know. So how do we actually go and reach them or engage them in some service?
There's so many of them. They're all different. How can I say? We have the method. Prabhupada has given us the method. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us the method. Prabhupada has given us the method of how to do it. We go out in Harinam. We distribute prasadam. We distribute books. And once in a while, if someone comes to our temple, we invite them to the temple, and then we tell them, you're a hog, a dog, or a camel, or an ass. Not directly. Otherwise they wouldn't come back. Because ultimately, you know, not only they're a hog, a dog, a camel, an ass, but we're a hybrid. They're not the only ones. We actually talk in the plural, that we're all, somehow or another, we're all mad people in this age. But by the mercy of Prabhupada and those who are conveying his message, then we have this opportunity to sit here in class and hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Someone's repeating, someone's listening. And we have an opportunity to see the deities and try to worship them, to chant the holy name. So now we're gradually trying to get out of the animal species, become a human being. When we become a human being, we might be able to understand what we're doing more clearly. So that's what we're doing. Not only they're confused, people on the outside, but we're all, most of us, we're all in the Bali concept of life. So how can we say we're not confused? How to preach to ourselves is the first thing. How to convince ourselves what we're doing. But all is there. Prabhupada has given us the whole methodology. We can study his books and hear his lectures and listen to his conversations, and that will tell us what to do and how to do it. It's not only, for instance, we go out in book distribution, we go out in Harinam, we distribute Prasadam, but there's a quality of it also. It's not only, well, I went on book distribution, I did so many books, and therefore I'm a great person. No, first we learn to become, how to become an instrument for Krishna, and then whatever we're doing will have some effect. And we're not an instrument for Krishna, we're an instrument for our false ego, or our senses, then it'll be very difficult to figure out what to do, to save ourselves, but to speak of anyone else. Yes?
Just one comment, probably you can elaborate on when I was in South Africa. I was at one meeting with politicians, it was before the World Cup 2010, and it was a religious bloc that was present. So there was this lunchtime break, and everyone kind of was talking to each other. And so I approached there, one of the politicians, ladies from the social department. I think she was one of the most senior people there, I don't know what position. So I showed her some of our books. We spoke a little bit, so she opened up to me. And then I said to her, I asked her, why do we allow pornography on internet and on TV in South Africa? She said, it's an economic driver. It's very simple. It's good for the economy. Makes a lot of money. So I was like shocked, you know, I didn't say anything because I was like too confused. How can she be so straightforward? And she said, it's just an economic driver. So it's good for the economy. So could you please help us understand how they can...
People are crazy.
They're crazy.
Well, you have to understand, good for whose economy? It's good for the politicians' economy, who get the bribes to allow it to do it.
Yeah.
They get some taxes, whatever else, people who are making the money, because most people don't make money from it.
Yes.
Just a few people make money from it. And the government gets some taxes, and then they probably get some bribes too, the government officials. So it's good for her economy.
Yeah.
Not good for anyone else.
So it's for the small bracket of
people who are exploiting her.
Yeah.
So the government is not trying. You went with the idea that the government's actually there to help the people.
Yeah.
But it's not there to help the people, it's to help themselves.
Exactly.
Prabhupada said when he was asked about organized crime, he said nowadays, modern society, organized crime means the government.
So she was not that straightforward. She could have said, you know, it makes money for us. You know, she still said it makes money for the economy, you know, it turns the money in terms of...
I know, most, there may be people, they're just, that's how they're taught. They just repeat, They just repeat what they were told, that's all. They don't really think very deeply about these things, because if they did, they would be in the government.
Yeah, probably.
They'd feel bad about what they're doing. Yes?
As you mentioned, living single life, so you have time for Krishna consciousness. It happens that only when you spend good time in your sadhana, you get many services, and to some degree, stress gives you stress. So
why do you have so many services? What's the value of so many services? Who gave you? Why do you have to do so many services? Some service has to be there. But you probably said the first thing is chant 16 good rounds a day.
Mm-hmm.
That's our first service. Hear Srimad Bhagavatam.
Bhagavad Gita, worship the deities. Try to do, and the service should be to make the atmosphere spiritual so that people become receptive to Krishna consciousness. So, unless we know what the goal of the service is to inspire us to hear and chant about Krishna. So, unless our service is inspiring us to hear and chant about Krishna, then it's called Shrava Eva Hi Kevalam, a waste of time. Duties, dharma, people perform are only such a waste of time, it says from the very beginning of Bhagavatam, if they don't provoke attraction to the message of the personality of Godhead. So you say there's no conflict between sadhana and service. Service is meant to inspire us in our sadhana, and sadhana is meant to inspire us in our service. So if that's not going on, we're just wasting our time. Yes.
In this Kali Yuga, chanting the holy name is the most important for God's realization. But we are also performing yagyas and other rituals.
Who is performing? You are.
Rituals, other samskaras, and all that. Is that important?
Is it important? You just answered your own question. Is it important? No, of course it's not important.
So what
for preaching?
Was it?
For preaching.
Anyhow, we may give it some importance, but ultimately the only important thing is to chant Hare Krishna without offense. Whether or not we can utilize these things in Krishna's service is another thing, to spread the Sankirtan movement. Whether it's necessary or not, that's another thing to do it. But if we're so attached to it, then Krishna is very merciful, then at least we should utilize it to spread Krishna consciousness. But otherwise, it's a waste of time. Prabhupada, for instance, when they opened the Krishna Balaram temple, he had the Brahmins come and chant. Because otherwise, he said actually it's the devotees chanting that is actually the opening. But because people in Vrindavan, at least at that time, they wouldn't accept our temples bona fide unless these Brahmins came and chanted. Therefore, he had those rituals done. But he didn't think it was very important himself. It was only important because otherwise people wouldn't accept our temple. Yes. Maybe. We're expected to know what's required of us to make spiritual progress. If you need a job, there's other jobs other than working at the temple. So, we're working, the temple is meant to be a missionary, part of a missionary movement, convince people that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we should become convinced that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead also. So unless we sufficiently hear and chant, we won't be able to do that. So that's the first thing we should see, that we're hearing and chanting sufficiently. Otherwise, generally speaking, there's so much to do at the temple. If you're submissive and you don't really see what your priorities are, they'll have you working 24 hours a day. But Prabhupada didn't appreciate that. When he went to the temple one time in Los Angeles in 1970, and he asked the devotees there, you know, how many rounds are you chanting? Are you chanting 16 rounds? And some of them said no, because our authorities told us we don't have time. Next life we can chant Hare Krishna. Probably didn't appreciate that. Alright, thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Kija. Srila Prabhupada Kija. More from Nandi.